Today, we're going to be talking about hunting turkeys right off the roost, first thing in the morning. So this is a situation where you've got a bird roosted and you're wanting to get tight to them first thing in the morning. And for those listening and not watching, we're recording this one outside of our camp, turkey camp here. So you're going to hear things like a little bit of wind noise, potentially some roosters, maybe a donkey.
Turkey gobble.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be good.
Yeah. So we've got Jake and Nick. And I guess Jake has probably done the most off the roost hunting out of all of us, I would say, just because of your experiences hunting before work, back before the THP days.
And just hunting more open country where there's just, I mean, a lot of times you can just see them fly up mm-hmm. into the tree even, so.
Yeah. And you're not necessarily roosting them by gobbles. Mm-hmm. You just watch them fly from a field
yeah.
up to a wood's edge.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years, we've definitely done some of it, and there's some do's and don'ts.
Which hopefully it'll be, because that's a lot of people's situation. That's what we're seeing around here. It's like the woods clears out by 8 o'clock. A lot of people got to mm-hmm. go to work by that time, where you got maybe an hour or two, if you're lucky, before work. And then, you know, you got the afternoon to hunt, if you're going to hunt throughout the week. So just being able to be effective just in that short time frame roosting a turkey, or being able to get tight to them on the roost is going to help you a lot yeah, with that.
For sure. So I think the first thing that comes to my mind is if you're out there roosting and you hear one gobbling, let's say you hear him 200-300 yards away, which is fairly realistic for a lot of situations, especially if you've already hiked in some. One of the things that I feel like I've started doing more and more of in the last couple of years is just trying to make a plan, at least as much of a plan the night before as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets easier as the season progresses and you get more, you know, leaves on the trees. Everything's a little bit, you got more cover. But I just think I used to be super timid. And I think that you definitely have to be careful. You can't get sloppy and just walk right up on them. But if you can get as tight as possible and kind of pick out a potential spot where maybe you want to set up or maybe where he's going to fly down, I think that's really going to help.
Mm-hmm.
Picking access routes on the way in, those are things that I feel are really important. What else do you guys look for the night before?
I think in a situation like that where you maybe strike one at 200-300 yards, if especially if it's early, like I try to cut the distance or get a different angle on it. Triangulated is what I heard Shane Simpson call it a couple of years ago, where you'd hear it from more than one angle. But especially if you have two people with, I like having like one person stay in the same spot and say you're hooting at them, which is a lot of times what we're doing to get them to gobble. Just have them stay back and, you know, every couple minutes just let out a hoot and the other person cut distance where you don't have to get right up tight to them and be hooting at them, because I think that can make them skittish sometimes, especially if you don't sound like an owl like I, you know, especially as you get closer. From a distance, I sound like an owl, I think, but if when I got to get close, I get a little hesitant to hoot at him as much. But, like, if you're real good at it, it's probably not going to make him clam up as much. But if you can just have that other person keep him gobbling and you can kind of just ease your way in, that's the lowest risk way to do it, I feel like, especially like you're talking about, as it gets later in the season and there's a bunch of leaves on the trees, the timber just gets so dark down underneath that, I mean, there's been a lot of times where you can slip right in there and even see him on the limb, you know, because it's so dark down low. Like that's what Ted and I did in Iowa a couple of years ago. He just stayed back and hooted.
Yep.
I got up on the ridge and I could glass a couple of the longbeards and got up there and got a look at what everything looked like before we went in there in the dark in the morning. And I mean, we were set up darn near within range of the turkeys, and that's the ideal situation, is be able to shoot them pretty much as soon as their mm-hmm. feet hit the ground, you know, mm-hmm. where you don't even have to call. You're just already, they were roosted down off the ridge. We were right up above them, you know, on a little flat spot where it's like they're going to probably fly up right to this spot unless they end up seeing us or spooking us. And in that situation, it was so nice, too, where we got to set up where we were kind of, they were right over the lip, like where the bottom half of our bodies were even covered up, where we could just see them on the limb, but they couldn't totally see us.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm kind of rambling, but
no, it's all good. That's podcast.
Yeah. That's one thing that you kind of got to make sure of too, I feel like, is don't get too tight where you're just going to be set up, especially if you're going to call at them where they can just look down and see mm-hmm. you. You got to be at, you know, it's just like when you're trying to call them in, you don't want to just be right out in the wide open.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I think is sometimes a challenge, especially if you've not spent a lot of time in that exact area, mm-hmm. is finding a spot where he's actually going to fly down. Yeah, sometimes being in range makes a lot of sense, but if he's roosted, like, for example, over some sort of disturbance where there's a lot of thick vegetation, he may be doing that on purpose to where he can fly up there, but then watch as it gets daylight everything around that and then go ahead and fly, you know, a couple mm-hmm. 100 yards potentially.
Right.
So I think that trying to plan that out a little bit, trying to pay attention to, especially if you're really close to a bird, like let's say you're hunting into the evening and you hear or watch them fly up, mm-hmm. think about where they flew up from.
Right.
Because a lot of times, I mean, it seems like almost 100% of the time they match that
mm-hmm.
and want to go right back.
You know, it's at least a possibility that yep. like that's a place that is open enough for them to fly down to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place they're willing to go to. Like if you're going to sit there, you know, 100 yards or a couple hundred yards away from and call, like you know that they're willing to make that yep. move, which a lot of times that's what ended up with our turkey hunt yesterday. It's like mm-hmm. we just had to get to a place where he was willing to go to. And then when we finally did, it's like he come in.
Yeah.
Not no problem, but he was way more willing to come in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was still leery, but mm-hmm. he was willing to come in there because that was his bubble. Mm-hmm. But so yesterday's hunt, we were, as the day progressed, we kept taking steps to lay the groundwork for roosting that turkey. Because mm-hmm. that was our plan, was to roost him if we didn't kill him in the middle of the day to be able to get in there this morning and be tight to him. So we hunted him early. And we were set up 200-300 yards from him mm-hmm. where he was roosted because we didn't know where he was or how to get in there or anything.
We just heard him way off the night yep. before. Couldn't pinpoint it. Ended up being two different turkeys, which confused us because the first one we heard is like, oh, it's down that way. And then I think they were just gobbling, mm-hmm. like alternating. So it really had us messed up as far as where they were. So we just decided to sit back and, you know, we couldn't make an aggressive move because we just knew we heard a gobble, but we didn't know where it was. But we knew a point where we should be able to hear it from again, obviously. So
yeah, and we were just set up. We were like, well, you know, maybe off chance we can pull him all the way up here. Well, that didn't happen. So we hunt him into the morning. We kind of get deeper into his bubble, get on his side of the creek. Don't get him. He goes quiet and moves off. So before we went out for lunch, we, you know, meandered our way through the bottom and where the goblin was coming from and just did some scouting around seeing, okay, this looks like a good area where they could roost right here.
Because it was a safe time to do it, too, because that turkey got down, moved away mm-hmm. pretty quickly yeah. from where he was roosted.
Which they often do, right. really.
Yeah. Right. And that's a great time to slip in there and go look at what that situation looks like. And so we did that. And then we found a road on the backside of the thickest cover because it's like he's roosting in the bottom and it's big, thick cover. And then an open road on the very top of the ridge.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking, we're like, okay, they could pitch right from the road to the tree or tree to the road if they wanted to. I mean, I imagine that's how they traverse through there a lot. So we're just slowly laying these things down. So we got an idea. So if we wouldn't have killed him yesterday early evening and we go to roost him and he's in the same area, we can go, okay, we can get, and we were going to roost from that road and from other angles and just try to pinpoint him like Jake was saying. And try to figure out how to get in there to him. So we were laying all those steps down as we were trying to kill him, but knowing we might have to roost this turkey. So just doing those things throughout the day is a big help.
Mm-hmm. I think it's super helpful too. Early season like this is like being tight to him. Like if you can get a turkey roosted, it's harder to do this time of year, it seems like. But if you can get him roosted, it's like you can get to him before they gobble in those hens too. Which like
yeah.
that what we've been dealing with pretty much the whole time. Early season is, I mean, 8 o'clock, and it's getting later. Like yesterday, that turkey gobbled till 10 o'clock, but it's like they're shutting up after they gobble in a couple hens. But if you can be that tightest hen to them, I think they're more willing to come check you out.
Yeah, and just the closer you are to them, when you've only got this much time that they're gobbling,
mm-hmm.
I like being really aggressive this time of the year in general. Whether I'm on foot, mm-hmm. you know, throughout the mid morning. Or I'm getting in tight to him off the roost because you really don't have that much time to mess around. You can't,
mm-hmm.
you can't as easily just say, hey, we're just gonna, you know, we'll just ease in there, you know, whenever, and then keep him gobbling because, like you said, there's a dang good chance they're gonna mm-hmm. be penned up quickly. And I just think that you know, the more aggressive you can be, the better off you're going to be for that early part of the morning. And that comes down to being in tight to the setup. But I really like what you said about laying the groundwork that the day before. The more you scout an area, all of these things become so much easier, because you might be like, oh, I didn't know that, you know, there was sand down along that creek bottom where I can probably walk in super quiet. Or maybe there's a two-track that you didn't know of that goes to the
there's plenty of that.
Yeah.
We're walking through a jungle, and then we pop up. I was like, oh, here's a road with turkey tracks on it. It's like, well, this is how he's moving through this area, because there was only a couple places where he could get, you know, through there.
Which that's all super handy,
right?
Like we were talking about earlier too. Even if you're not right on top of him, if you're in one of his routes,
one of his safe places that he's traveling every day, like this, this turkey was doing. He had these spots he's hitting every day because he's been messed with.
Another theory I have before I forget, I think we were talking about it, is when we roosted those turkeys that night, especially this, like in weather like we're having right now, it's like cooler. Turkey, it's going to be a hard day to strike a turkey. The sun's not out. It's just kind of cold and dreary. But we were in there that afternoon, and it wasn't super, super nice weather, if I remember right. But we're in there calling the whole afternoon, kind of moving around. Never heard a turkey gobble, but then got to hooting and whatnot. And I just think when you're doing stuff like that, spending time in an area, like he's hearing you call and he's probably, you know, thinking about it. I just like to picture him, like, you know, fluffing up down in there a little bit, starting to feel his.
What are you guys doing?
Yeah.
What are you hens
doing? Not going to gobble, but and then he gets up on the limb. But you've kind of built that up where he's going to be way more willing to gobble than if you just went in there and started hooting and he hasn't heard a hen all afternoon. He's just kind of sitting up on the limb cold.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And we did like a fly up sequence, and I'm sure he heard, like, I know he heard that. And then we finally heard him gobble after hooting at him for a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like fly up sequence to get him to gobble is something that is pretty interesting, especially if you've practiced it. You know, we do a lot of hooting and coyote howling, but it's definitely something that we could incorporate more.
Yeah. Especially in a situation like that where we've been painting the picture all afternoon that there's a couple hens up or a hen up on this road.
So anything else that comes to mind the night before, or the day before even?
I think, like you kind of alluded to, like having an entry and exit route, and like ideally even a tree
right in front of that camera.
Oh, my bad.
And ideally even a tree picked out
should be good.
That you can set up on, like knowing that the day before going in there is just like having a tree where you know you got good shooting and where you can set up is super handy.
Trying to think, we had an example of that last year when me and Bruce roosted that turkey, and his buddy was there in town with us, and me and Bruce had this turkey at 30 yards, but it had gotten late, and we were like, he ain't coming. And we were wrong. We had face masks down, you know, we're just hanging out, telling stories. He's showing me Snapchats, and I just happened to look up, and there's this long beard, half strut, 30 yards, just looking around. And this,
Bruce has got his 410 laid across his.
Yeah, I met Bruce this the night before, so we have less than 24 hours together. And I used some expletives in this phrase that I said to him, but essentially I just said, don't move. And he said, like, the demeanor changed everything, because we went from laughing to then I just hit him with this, and he's like, I don't know this cat very well, but surely he wouldn't try to mess with me like this. And I wasn't. Anyways, this bird slips past us. He probably could have killed him, but he's like, oh, we'll just roost him and kill him tomorrow. We roosted him, and we're driving out of the woods. We had to drive right by him, and we could look in the woods, and we saw the limb he's on. So we see him on the limb, and then we look, and we're like, okay, that tree right there, that's where we're gonna go. So the next morning, me and his buddy Walt went in there, and we sat right on that tree, and he killed him 5 minutes after he hit the ground.
And that was a situation where it's like there's this logging road, you know, that he pitched up from. He's probably gonna pitch right down into the open there. It's like it's a kind of a no-brainer as far as where he's gonna pitch. Same thing with that Vermont turkey I killed. We just couldn't shoot him in that road. But it's like he's probably gonna fly down right to that road. Hopefully he stays in the timber, but I'd imagine, especially with the rain, he's going to fly down right to that road. Especially when you got terrain, it's pretty easy to predict where they're going to fly down, it seems like.
That was another thing I was going to point out about predicting. It's almost like the terrain aside, first thing is where can you actually get a line up to that limb?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you're walking through these places, laying the groundwork, as you said earlier, Nick, a lot of times we're looking for a clear path up to big limbs, you know, whether it be a pine or a
horizontal
big oak.
Limbs.
Yep. You're looking for that clear path, and then you start getting into terrain, and a lot of times, just for the sake of, I guess, path of least resistance for them, it seems that they want to pitch off something and land almost at that level. Mm-hmm. And then if they want to get higher, they can limb hop from there, but they almost always seem to pitch off of a roost into a roost, I guess, from a high point or a side of a ridge or a bench or whatever. But the other thing that's true about a turkey is they have to run to get going.
Especially a gobbler.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting to watch a hen fly up compared to a gobbler, especially like field turkeys. Mm-hmm. Like where I grew up, it's like they take a running start. It's like a big jet engine taking off.
Yeah.
Like they need a lot more room to get going.
I like how it kind of starts getting like, oh, please get me up there. Get up. It's cool, too, because even if you hear turkeys fly up, like I know, especially it felt like those first couple of years we were hunting down south, when we would get in close to a roost on an evening hunt and we'd hear turkeys fly up, it would be like, okay, there's that donkey. You get to hear the hens. And then the tom goes up and it's like there's just a slower.
That's a heavier turkey.
Yeah, you can just tell there's something different. And even if he doesn't gobble, if you hear a group of turkeys and you hear one that sounds like he's heavier, there's probably a dang good chance he's going to be in there gobbling in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then just using that reference to of where they pitched up from in the morning generally is extremely, extremely handy. And I think going into the next morning, one thing that I struggle with a little bit, and like I guess this is one of the reasons that I wanted other perspectives, is you guys know me. I'm like, play it super safe. Let's not get the truck too close. I hate vehicles and hunting. Like deer, turkey, I just don't want to be close with my vehicle. I want to stay away. I'm happy to walk a long way in. But some situations like here, I've been thinking about it a lot. If I had a turkey roosted here, it's like I'm going to probably try to drive as close as possible because this place is super roaded. And we've had a lot of examples where we're hunting right now of people just driving right past you.
Yeah.
So it's like if you were to park backed off, which I believe is a safer move, to where he's not going to see your headlights, not going to hear you dinking around at the truck, shutting doors, whatever, then you're playing it safer. But if you do that, there's a darn good chance somebody's going to be like, well, I can just drive right in here and get on this turkey. Which, I mean, that's just the way it sets up here. I mean, it's really no, it is just the way it is. Other places aren't necessarily like that, and sometimes you roost turkeys that you know nobody else, or highly likely nobody else even heard them or saw them, but I guess I always, to start, just want to play it safe. I want to be, if I can put something between where I'm parking my vehicle, this is just literally step one, something between me and where that turkey is, whether that's vegetation in flat areas or terrain in hill country.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that's number one.
Yep.
I don't know what you do here. Really?
Yeah.
Other than just
hope nobody pulls up there, because like you said, like if your vehicle's parked right close, like they're either going to pull right up to it anyway, or they're just going to keep driving past it. So it's mm-hmm. like it's hard to know what the right move is to do. Is really just hope that somebody doesn't come down that road.
Yeah,
somebody's time frame.
Like, being respectful enough, I guess. But yeah, that's the starting point. I really, really like being able to put terrain between you and the turkey. Then you feel like you got room to shut the doors and you got headlights that are shining. I mean, I don't necessarily think that always makes that big of a difference, especially if you're early, but it could.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, why risk it, you know?
Another thing, too, about roosting turkeys is that's, like, obviously the easiest time to wake up earlier in hell. And and, like, that's, like, what we were talking about the other day. Warren was clearly stressed about how late we got there because we heard those turkeys. But it's like we didn't know where they were, so there wasn't going to be a super huge advantage to us getting in there, you know, in the pitch black dark. We didn't feel like anybody was going to be back in that spot just because nobody had been throughout the whole weekend, so why would they be during the weekday? So, but if we would have had a pinpoint on those turkeys, it would have been a lot different situation where you can get away with a lot. Like, I'm just thinking back to that Vermont turkey again last year. We could see him on the limb from the road, so we knew right where he was, and we knew roughly where we needed to be. And you can just go in there and sound like an ant, like if you, especially if you're getting in there pitch black dark, turkeys are still asleep. Like we got, I think Ted even has footage of the hens being up there. Same with the, with your turkey in Wisconsin being, you know, right underneath them like that. Like they're asleep and they'll put up with noise. Like there's constantly animals walking around underneath them throughout the night, raccoons, armadillos, deer, all kinds of stuff. So as long as you're moving slow enough, you can get away with quite a bit of noise.
Your pace.
Right. You just know. Sound like an animal, like we often talk about, but just getting in there super early, and when even if you do break a loud stick, like they might pop their head up, but they can't see you. You just stop for a while and let things calm back down. And they're probably
limbs
going,
break in the dark. You know, trees fall, things like that.
As long
that,
as you're not just constantly, you know, marching in there. It's, you know, once you get within when you think the turkey might be able to start hearing you, then you take it super super slow, lights off. You know, just easing your way in.
Yeah, one thing that I was going to mention was the lights, because I've noticed over the years we've definitely got the question, do you guys use lights on your way in? A lot of times, just going in for a hunt with nothing specific roosted, we'll use like a green light or a red light
or hit your cell phone and keep it, I always just keep it down where, you know, the turkey's roosted up in the tree, just keep the light where it's not going to go up towards them. I think that, honestly, that might be one of the best things you can use, or just your headlamp, just keep that down by your feet. But a lot of times we're just cutting them when we're getting to, you know, close enough where you think they might see it.
Yeah,
your eyes will adjust no matter how dark it is. More times than not.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is same thing that we're talking about when you park. I remember last, or well, it's so hilarious. I'm probably gonna do this for forever. It was the 22 season.
Last year.
It was last season for me. But Hayden and I were on our way in, and it was so thick, and it was so steep, and we're going through that laurel and rhododendron that, like, we kind of just needed the lights. But before we turned them on, we checked with each other, like, do you think that we're good here? There's probably enough terrain between us and him that he can't see us. Do you agree? And he's like, yeah. So we clicked green light on and used that until we got on the same ridge as him. And at that point, it had just barely started to kind of glow to the east, and that allowed us to see. Because otherwise, in that rhododendron, it was too dark to see. But when we got into that stuff, we were making a ton of noise, and we had actually looped all the way around the turkey and got on the uphill side of him. It would have been way easier for us to just walk up a path and just get right on that path. The problem then would have been he was above us. He'd had high ground where he could have seen well. And then the odds of him flying there and coming down and us getting away with that just felt like it was low odds. So we put all this extra effort in to really not go that far from where we were parked. And we made this loop around him, got up on that ridge. And at that point, everything was shut off, and we just tried to be deer crawling through the laurel. And it just worked like a charm. I mean, got in there, and he was right where we'd left him the night before, straight down the nose of the ridge from us. He gobbled on the roost. I called one time, I think, and he gobbled on the ground and then came right to us.
How far do you think he was on the limb?
Probably, and he might have even been like 150, 100, 150. But kind of the theory there, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about of predicting the fly down route. It seems to me like in terrain, they'll want to fly from up high, and then they pitch down into the hill again. So they don't, I'm not saying I've never seen this, because I absolutely have, where they pitch and they go way downhill. But a lot of times they don't want to fly super far. So, or they can't, like the route doesn't allow for them to do that soaring thing. So a lot of times they'll just fly here and then they can do their traveling from there. But he had been clearly alone. That night we'd called him in from a long way away, actually. And we were super close to getting him that night. He flew up right in front of us, and it was just like, oh, that's kind of unique. But when he flew up there, we knew exactly where he was, and our thought was he'll probably fly right back down to that same spot, which will put him on that nose but below us. And then if he's alone and has known there's a hen in the area, he'll likely go up high, cast his gobble down. And, I mean, I think we probably could have just sat there and done nothing, and he'd have walked right up to us just because – how fast he got there. It seemed like, I mean, it seemed like that's what he was doing. And it feels good when your theory works out like that. But that was a situation where we didn't want to also be right on top of him, because we wanted to have a little bit of room and a little bit of buffer, because we knew it was going to be thick getting to him. But, you know, that was just a good example of making a plan, spending a bunch of extra time early in the morning. I mean, it took us 2 hours to do all that, and we seriously only walked, like, I don't know, maybe 400 yards total. But, man, we were tiptoeing. And I just, like, I mean, I'm one of these guys, you guys know, who's hunting with me. Like, when it's like, we got something that feels like it could be a really good thing, I want to take it pretty seriously the whole way. But,
yeah, that's probably my favorite thing, one of my favorite, you know, ways to turkey hunt is like knowing you got one roosted and that you can get in there tight. Like, I love seeing them up on, like, being able to see them up on the limb or just be real tight to them where you get to hear them fly down and drum up there and stuff. It's, I like watching them on the limb.
Yeah, that's growing up, I didn't have that many opportunities to hunt turkeys like that, because at the deer lease, they roost off of us
in the canyon.
So you'd stand at the property line and you listen to them and you wait for them to come to you. And
when you kind of intercept them coming up. Yeah.
Yeah, or just strike them in the middle of the day.
Sure.
So I would see videos of people, you know, getting under the limb, and I used to always think, it's like, man, I would love to do
Greg
that.
Greg Clements, just Wizards of Oz footage of hundreds of turkeys flying out.
Yeah, seriously.
It's just like, I want to get under them like that. So it's relatively new to me. Just the last probably 3 or 4 years, I've found opportunities to be able to hunt.
Which you had
like
a couple
that.
Day hunt there up at. In Wisconsin, underneath the old roost tree there.
I hunted those turkeys 3 or 4 times. I hunted them for, like, me trying to kill them, I think, three times, and then went to film Crystal try to kill them once or twice, and maybe somebody else. But it's cool. I really enjoy that. Me and Warb and Ted had a really good roost hunt last year in Mississippi, and one Warb killed. We roosted him from, like, it's like 800 yards, a super long way to hear a turkey in Mississippi, especially, you know, how that forest just seems to just eat up those gobbles and you can't hear them as far. This was just a perfect scenario where it was like planted pines, but only about truck high, and then he's on the other side of the planted pines. So even though it's a long ways, it was a clear path to a road we were on where you could hear his gobble. And or me and Ted, we both said, we think this turkey is on the point of this ridge. And Warb was like, I really think he's about 300 yards below that, like where this creek come through. So Warb was like, Warb will love this. This is what me and Ted got to say, we were right and you were wrong. So anyways, we get up super early. It was like a 3 o'clock alarm that morning, and we're slipping in there. And what Warb was doing, no light. And there's three of us, so, you know, the two guys in the back, you're not using the light at all. You're just paying attention to the guy in front of you. Put your foot where he put his and follow along that way. And Warb was leading the way, and he would just every so often click on his red light, point it down, just to get a gauge of what is here and what's up ahead of him a little bit. And then he'd take a few steps. And then when we were where we thought turkeys could be, he wouldn't use any light at all, and we're just feeling through there. But we get to this tree. And it's like 30, 40 minutes before gobble time. And he's like looking at the map. He's like, I think he's another 200-300 yards down. I think he's going to be right here. And me and Ted are both saying, well, we think he's like right, should be right in here. We should be like inside 100 of him. He's like, I don't know, that gobble last night just sounded deep. He was like, it sounded hollow. He was low. We're like, I think he's right around here. And we're standing there at this tree, and Warp's just being goofy, just doing Warp things. And he's just like keeps shouldering his gun. He's like, it's unloaded. And he's just like shouldering it. And he's like, oh yeah. He dry fired it once or twice. And he'd be like, oh, how nice would that be? He just pops up, pow, and he's just dry firing it in the dark. And then finally he's like, you know, I think I hear drumming. I was like, I might have heard it, but I'm not sure. And then about that time, this thing unleashes, and he's like 50 yards just to our right. And Warb's eyes are just as big as golf balls. And he's like, and we slid down. We killed him, so it worked out good. But that was a fun one.
That's hilarious. I think another situation that a person could be in is like I kind of got him roosted. Kind of like what you just talked about, Nick. Like you maybe have a ballpark within, you know, anything from 100 to 300 or 400 yards of where the turkey might be.
Which that's a lot different than the situation we had, because we had like a cone that was like 180 degrees, I feel like. Because it ended up being two different turkeys, so it really threw us off. Mm-hmm. But, like, if just one's gobbling, like you're saying, and you can get within 200 yards, I think it's worth just being, like, as close as you possibly can. Then in an ideal world, maybe that turkey starts to gobble real early that morning. I mean, there's mornings where they'll be gobbling hour before daylight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You can't obviously plan for that, but just in case he does, you might be able to make, a 100-yard move on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the reason that I brought this up is because one hunt just popped into my mind because I was showing you the pictures of that Maryland turkey, and I was thinking about how unique of a roost, right off the roost hunt that was. We had heard that turkey in the same spot every single morning, but he would gobble for just a little bit, and then he'd shut up. And it did just seem like he was the king. I mean, we had kind of started, we even nicknamed him something like that. I don't remember what it was, but, he's just up there. And the king roost is what it was. King roost has a whole weird theory that's been formed over the years, but it's essentially a king roost is where you've got a ridge where you've got multiple creeks converging, and then he can cast his gobble off that king roost way down that creek bottom, and he would be there every single day. The turkey that Warb and Hayden and I got in 2022, I believe, in Illinois, that was a king roost spot. Same deal. Turkey's always right there. He always had the hens, too. Anyway, we can dive into that more in detail later. You seem curious about it. You seem interested. King roost. It's a theory. Anyway, this turkey had been gobbling there, and we felt pretty confident that he was there, and we had decided that the afternoon before that we wanted to try to roost him because it was super calm. We thought, at the very least, we'd probably be able to hear the thing fly up. But he's been there every day that we've hunted in the area where we could hear him. So we ended up going there to try to roost, and sure enough, he didn't gobble, and we didn't hear him fly up. So it's like, man, do we just go for it anyway, And we decided that we were just going to take our chances and go in there. It was like, he's always been there. It makes sense. It's the king roost. It makes a lot of sense terrain-wise. And we had seen sign in there. So some mornings we would follow him to lay the groundwork. And what we knew was right on the top, there was a little bit of a disturbance there. I don't know if it almost seemed like they had just done a very, very small select cut. So there was a little bit of underbrush. But right on the edge of that, it was super open with a lot of white pine, very beautiful open hardwoods. And he seemed to be roosting right off that edge. Well, Keith and I go in that morning and we're being super quiet. But because we're being so quiet, we start getting a little bit late, like it's just starting to get daylight. And this is actually a funny part of the story that I don't know if we ever stated in the video, but we're like in his pocket. We don't know yet, because again, he didn't gobble or hear him fly up, but it's like we're right on top of him. We're so close, maybe 30 more yards of crawling, and we're at the edge of that little disturbance. And Keith's just like, Zach. What? And he's like, dude, I gotta take a shit. And I'm just like, oh. And I was just like, well, I mean, just try to be. He's like, I'll be real quick. But Keith is like, I got a lot of stories of him saying things like that at times like that. And I mean, he knows sooner than goat drops at, like, slightly out of my sight, And that thing gobbles right where we think he's going to be, and we're already like 8 yards from him. It's like, whoa. He about knocks our head off. And it's still dark enough, but it's kind of like, luckily we're in that little disturbance, so we got enough brush between us and him. And Keith, he was pretty quick. He slides right back, and we start crawling in, and we're crawling in, and he's gobbling the whole time, and we really weren't making any noise. I don't think he even was gobbling at us scratching, which is somewhat rare. But we were going through grass, so I don't think he could hear us. And I was just putting trees between us and him, and there was one tree that was just about as wide as my shoulders, maybe slightly less. But I thought, man, if we can get there and he flies right down, we're going to be right on top of him. He gobbled and gobbled and gobbled, and I still to this day don't know how we didn't see him. There was just enough tree between us and him, and we probably got 50 yards from that thing, or 60 maybe, of him in the tree, and he's right about eye level. He pitches down, and we kind of see him flash, hits the ground, and goes straight away from us. And it's just like, tch, 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 tch. And he gobbles, and it's like, pow, like, dang it, dude. Like, we just spent all that effort getting in here on him and ended up just doing some light purring and scratching, and he ended up coming right back up there. But that turkey would shut down so fast every day. I think our only legit chance at getting him was getting in tight to him, being one of the hens that he would get with really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think the light calling, because that area was getting pressured, I think the light by us and others, I think the light calling and the scratching in that situation just did it. But that also is a neat little segue into, do you call to them on the roost or do you not call to them on the roost?
I think most times I end up calling at them. Like, the one I can think about where we didn't, it was the Iowa one last year, just because, mm-hmm. I mean, all of a sudden we heard drumming, and it's like, I mean, this turkey should be able to see it. Like, we never did see him, but it's like, this thing is close. And then we end up killing a different turkey, and he flew down. Like, I might have ended up calling him, but he flew down when it was so dark, mm-hmm. that didn't even give us a chance to. I guess I didn't call out that Vermont one, but a lot of times I end up calling at him, just something real light, just so they know you're there, and then mm-hmm. usually just kind of shut it up.
Yeah, I think like a situation where I do normally, and I feel like these are situations where more times than not, I haven't killed birds in these type scenarios. But the other morning, me and you set up, and had two turkeys gobbling, and we got as close as we thought we could to the closest one. It was another situation, not roosted, so we just go in there, you know, just a little bit before daylight, hear them, and we have to go a long ways to them. And we're probably 200, 250 yards from him on the limb, but we don't know exactly where he is, so it's tough, and it's really bright now, but he's still in the tree. So we just get set down, and we concoct this theory that he's the subordinate bird, and then the one that's gobbling the least is the one that has the hens with him further down. So I start tree yelping to this turkey, and then we might even done a fly down then just to put it in his head, in his little pea-sized brain, that if he's the subordinate bird and the other turkey's way over there and we're on this side of him, maybe if he knows that there's a hen over here, he might just slip up here right quick and try to get with that hen before that other bird gets over there. So that's a scenario. But I feel like the closer you get into them, maybe not really no calling to them on the limb. Let them fly down, and if they don't land right in your lap, then yelp
as
to them real soft.
As soon as they get down.
Yeah, as soon as they hit the ground, then try to mm-hmm. turn them right to you.
Yeah. I would say that my general rule is if they can see the ground where I'm at from their tree,
yep.
then mm-hmm. no.
Yep.
If they're further than that, or
just to make them fly your direction, mm-hmm. you know, help the chances of them pitching down your direction. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to put it. If you can see them, probably not.
And more so, if
otherwise
they're
just going to sit up there and look
right,
over there and know
exactly.
they should see a hen.
Exactly. And I think turkeys, you know, male birds will do that often. They'll stay in the tree and gobble and try to bring those hens to the
yeah.
base of their tree before they even fly down. Mm-hmm. And that's a situation you're going to run into at some point if you're hunting tight to the roost.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to fly to it. They're going to wait. They're going to see that hen. They're going to go right to her.
If you don't have the patience to not call at them, then just try
Stay
not
home.
To set up. Try not to set up within range of them. Because the advantage to that is then you can just sit over there and call and scratch and sound like a turkey on the ground, and then they got to come check you out. But
yeah. How many times have you gotten within like 100, 150 yards of a bird and you think he don't have any hens and he's gobbling, you don't even hear any light yelping, and then it's after fly down and you're like, why is he still on the limb? And then you just hear, mm-hmm. and there's a hen coming from somewhere else going right to him, and then within minutes he's done. He's
mm-hmm.
shut up.
Yep.
I mean, hell, it happened the other day. It
yeah.
happened to that turkey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we heard a hen move in that direction, and then it wasn't long after that he was quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, the one that comes to mind that recent that I thought was in the bag that was a roost hunt was, I think I might have just told you this story. I was with Ben and Keith, and we had hunted the area, knew there was a lot of sign in there, had heard a bird in there, and I was kind of hoofing it up this ridge. It was a weird night, like real breezy. We ended up storming in the middle of the night, and I'm kind of hoofing it up this ridge, and I just get this real strange instinct, like I need to just stop right here. I just kind of slam on the brakes, and as soon as I do that, this turkey gobbles right in my face, because I'm up on the high point and he's just off the high point in a tree, and it's like, you know, whoops, mountain ran him over. So I slipped down, I sat in a tree, and he gobbled a handful more times, and I really had pinpointed it then. I was like, okay, this has got to be where he's at. And I had it about perfectly pinned, like to the yard I had it pinned, because he was so close to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, he seriously was so close. So the next morning I thought, okay, we're going to go up that same trail. It'll be dark enough, and there was a burn. So he was in a burn. I figured that we would be able to get to where there was a little bowl there, and he was out on the finger. I figured he would fly down to that side hill and kind of either come up to the saddle or the high point. But if we kind of got right up in that the saddle and got enough cover, didn't want to be too close, but thought, you know, he'd probably fly a good ways through here. And this one's hilarious because it was like, dude, in my mind, that hunt was in the bag. So we get up that morning and we start hiking in, and it's pitch black, starts raining a little bit, and then we slide in, get set up, and it's dark. And we have time, which is crazy for us. Guys like us who don't like getting up. And I'm sitting there in the rain, and all of a sudden here this turkey wakes up and he starts gobbling, and he's gobbling a lot. I'm really timid to call because it's a burn, so I'm thinking, you know, there's a dang good chance he's gonna stand up there and look. So I let out like probably the most like wimpy little pew. And I thought, well, he certainly heard that. Well, hindsight, I'm not convinced that he heard it, because all of a sudden, dude, he was up there for a good bit, but nothing crazy. And all of a sudden, sun just goes, pitches, goes all the way down across the road into the valley below the road and hits the ground and just, and it's just like he went from 100 yards in the tree to like 500 yards in the bottom and is now like working away from us and just starts gobbling on the ground like crazy. I'll fast forward to kind of the ending. We make a move on him, get really close, and ended up, he just was acting, he never acted normal. He just would always stay on the backside of the ridge and would just gobble at everything we did, every scratch, every call, and ended up giving up on it. And as we walked, so he went this direction, and as we walked his route back to our truck that he had flown to, mm-hmm. we kicked up a hen. So I realized he was up there gobbling that whole time, and he flew right to where she was. He knew that she was there. He knew that she was on a nest. We never walked up to the nest, but she pitched like she was in a nest out of a little clump of mm-hmm. junk. And it was like, the reason that he... So then we were like, well, this thing's probably been messed with. And I'm not saying he hadn't been messed with, but why would he leave the hen that he knew was right in that nest? I think mm-hmm. is what he was doing the whole time. And in our head, we're like, well, why won't he just come up here? You know, he's 50 yards on the other side of the hill. Why won't he come up here? Our calling's great, dude. But I bet he was just standing there with that hen just waiting for her to do something. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I think he might have got weirded out by the fact that we had been calling to him so much and just kind of worked off. Mm-hmm. But then when we went down there, that hen flew. And it was just interesting because, you know, that they certainly are going to be with those hens. And they know where they're at. And I think as the season progresses, like that was a later in the season hunt. I do think that there are some – but things change where, like, right now – they're up there calling the hens to them. Mm-hmm. But that changes here in a couple of weeks. Like, if you're here where we're at now in a couple of weeks, it's going to be way different here.
That's why I don't know if it makes a difference. Like, we're talking, I mean, they got the brain the size of a pea, but a lot of times I'll try to just call at them a little bit the night before. Even if I got them started by hooting at them, especially if I moved in on them and got real tight, I'll just try to yelp at them that night where I plan on yelping at them from in the morning. Mm-hmm. Nah, I don't know if they remember it, but, I mean... Like you talking about him knowing that hen was down there, maybe she was doing some light yelping that you never heard, but mm-hmm. it can't hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can get him fired up that night before, maybe he'll answer you with a gobble a couple times. It makes you feel pretty good going into the morning.
Mm-hmm. For sure. What do you feel like is, like, I guess, do you guys have any opinion on this? One issue that I think you can have going in the morning is moonlight in open timber. So, like, let's say you're in, I mean, I think of some of the hunts that we've had at early season, like in Alabama, where you're in the hills, and there's not a leaf in the trees, and you got this much leaf matter, mm-hmm. and there's moon.
Mm-hmm.
and you can just kind of see everything.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a situation where you can't really get away with as much. Like we were talking about how much you can get away with. And I mean, if you have ground cover, or brush cover around you, that's one thing. But walking in that type of condition where it's wide open in the timber,
you need quiet access, mm-hmm. I think, in that situation. Because it was full moon in that Vermont turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was, it might as well have been daylight, it felt like, when we were walking in.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about that, granted, we knew where the turkey was, or we saw him the night before, but you could see him clear as day up on the limb, you know. So we were able to, you know, we had to get off the road a certain distance there. But we also knew he was probably going to hear us if we were too loud. So that's why we got up super, super early, I think. That's important on a full moon night. It's like just getting in there while they're still asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So like we were walking, you know, we would break some stuff and then you'd just glass up there. All right, he's still, he's not, he, you know, you'll know if he's, oh, if yeah. he's hearing you or not. And there was one point where we broke something and I don't remember if it was him or the hen woke up, but we just gave it some time and they just went right back to, you know, couldn't see their head anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I think having quiet access and just doing it while they're still asleep, like you're going to have to get in there early.
Which is where you lay that groundwork, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know where the trails are. You know where the creek bottoms of sand are.
Mm-hmm.
Down, you know, right in the creek where maybe you can step on water or sand the whole time.
Yeah. Where if you got in there that tight the night before, in theory, you should be able to do it again in the morning without mm-hmm. them seeing you. You
for
know?
Sure.
Yeah. And that back to the groundwork, that Mississippi turkey that Warb killed last year, we had been all in those woods. The mid-morning and afternoon before we roosted this turkey. So I mean, we had been in there and called up a wad of hens and a handful of jakes and then got in there and walked around and found a bunch of scratching. And so we knew what all the terrain looked like and how to get in and out of there, and that played a big part in it. Because, mm-hmm. you know, although we went in dark and early, we had a little bit of knowledge of what that layout was like and how we'd be able to move through there.
Yeah.
Another thing that we hear a lot of places that I'd like to talk about is like people saying you can't roost turkeys here. There hasn't been a place that we've been to where you can't roost a turkey.
Yeah.
Especially if you're good at locator calls. Like, I'm not saying I could roost a turkey everywhere, but I mean, if we get Warb out there or somebody that
or you get a real life pack of coyotes yeah. howling, there's a damn good chance someone's going to answer
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm. And you, it might be, it's probably like, one out of eight nights, really.
Yes.
But
kind of everywhere, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've noticed in different places, and there might not be any weight to this at all, but I feel like when it comes to roosting turkeys, if you say that you can't roost turkeys somewhere, you might not be trying to roost late enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've noticed a tendency, like at the deer lease, they'll gobble early. They seem to gobble early in the evening, headed to the roost, and then when they're on the limb, they seem to really clam up once they mm-hmm. get up there, and they will gobble once it gets like pitch dark, but not as much as some other places yeah. I've been to. They don't gobble at all headed to the roost, but as soon as it's pitch black dark, you can rip a coyote howl mm-hmm. and you'll hear several birds.
Mm-hmm. I think just watching turkeys like after they get up on the limb, it's like they're stressed out when they first get up there and they're trying to figure mm-hmm. out how to get comfortable. I think you got to just wait and let them settle in up there a little
bit. And maybe that's why it's like, you know, once it's pitch dark, mm-hmm. you can notice you'll, you know, yank a gobble out of one
mm-hmm.
when you know, you might have done your best fly up sequence of your life and mm-hmm. the best hoots you've ever done, you mm-hmm. know, right at fly up or within minutes of them flying up there, and they might not answer, but mm-hmm. he slammed the truck door after he got comfortable and he'll gobble at it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a person that has limited time to hunt, maybe you just got a small window in the morning, if any afternoon that you can get out, that's going to help your chances dramatically. Even if you just roost a turkey one time per spring, mm-hmm. I mean, it's worth it. It's like having a good pinpoint on one, just being like cautiously aggressive and get in there close and getting tight to one. There's not many things that are better than that in the mm-hmm. turkey woods to me.
Yeah. I think that cover is kind of the last thing that comes to my mind. Is like once you're in there trying to pick cover, because we're talking about the ideal a lot, but there's a lot of situations where you are talking about that. Like, I know he's in here. You're looking at the map, you can draw a circle, but you can't necessarily get the tree. In those situations, I like to try, if I don't know where he's going to be, like let's say we're going to set up and we know that he's somewhere around here, but like he could be here, he could be here, he could be here. trying to just have as much cover as possible, which is challenging. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get in there in the dark and it's maybe just light enough. And the, you know, talk about a high stress situation. It's like, you know, you're running out of time and you're looking around and there ain't nothing but a bunch of bare trees mm-hmm. that are, you know, the size of your shoulders. It's like, then what? You know, so I think in those situations too, trying to grab any little thing that you can that's like just extra cover and moving slow. Mm-hmm. So you give yourself as much time as possible. That way you can kind of scramble and still grab some stuff, put some cover up. Because if you're dealing with open woods and it gets daylight, especially if it gets, you know, maybe it's gray and you're like, you know what, I'm going to call to this thing. And you get a little aggressive and you call and then he looks down there and it's just like it's you sitting against a tree. I mean, you know, and I do think, seriously, this is something that I've actually heard in the last like couple of weeks, I've heard multiple people say this to me. I got this theory. It's like, man, he stayed in the tree for so long. I think there's a lot of times he just saw you or heard you or thought something was weird. He may not be sitting there looking at you now, but maybe he heard something coming in the dark. And he's like, I don't really know what that is. Maybe not even enough to make him not gobble. But let's say he stays up there and he gobbles and he gobbles and he gobbles. Well, think about it from his perspective. If he gets to gobbling and he calls up a hen, she proves that it's safe. Now he can fly down. Mm-hmm. It's another thing, too. Or another situation where he might pitch and just get out of town. You know what I mean? So I just think that, you know, really thinking of your cover, your access is really important. Mm-hmm. And if
another thing I was going to just thought of is if you are going to get in a situation where you can see him on the limb, I try to put a big tree kind of like where I can just be peeking around it where he's not just look, you know, you don't have to sit frozen still the whole morning because you're going to get uncomfortable sitting there for a long time where if you can shift around a little bit and just tilt your head around the tree. And, you know, I usually like to just get in a comfortable position, just sit there and watch them through my binos.
You talk about uncomfortable positions on a roost. Last year in Texas, me and Jake and Ted roosted this turkey, and it was a perfect situation of, like, this big ridge was going up, and there was a gravel road going up it. And that you could tell there's droppings everywhere. So you know they're using this gravel road, and then when you get up high, you're exactly the limb level with every big oak limb in this whole creek bottom. So it's like a runway just gets right there and jumps over and back and forth. So we roost this turkey, and when he gobbled at them, I mean, they're right on top of him, and he's eye level with them, gobbling at them in the dark. And the next morning, we slip in there super early, and Jake had actually found a tree the night before. He's like, this will be a good tree to get on. And it's this heavy trail, comes right out of the bottom. So if he doesn't pitch to the road, maybe he'll just come right up this trail to the road. Well, we slip in there. We get set up, I mean, probably an hour before gobble time. In about 2 seconds after we get settled, just the most atrocious thunderstorm comes in. And it is thundering and lightning, and it pisses rain on us for 2 hours. It is just pissing rain. And I'm just sitting, I mean, uncomfortable. I'm already uncomfortable because I'm just like this for 2 hours in the dark, not wanting to move because this turkey's supposed to be like 50 yards away right there. But now I'm soaking wet and freezing. Mm-hmm. And you just get poured on for 2 hours. And then they didn't pitch to the road because there was a field below on the other side of the creek bottom. So they're wet and everything. And it was still raining. They pitched out into the field.
One of those deals, kind of like you talked about earlier, like he sailed way down in there.
Yeah,
which and that you was don't just, always do. That, no, I think if it hadn't rained, that turkey was gonna have a very surprising morning.
Yeah, or one of them, because there were several of them in there, mm-hmm. and that was demoralizing. I mean, just so
sat
bad
there for so long. Another funny one I was telling him about the other day, when Scheffler went turkey hunting with me and Ted.
Yeah.
So that camp was me, Ted, Scheffler, Gooch, and Shane Simpson. Because we got to talk about Shane Simpson. I was like, have you ever spent much time around Shane Simpson alone? And I was just like, he's got a lot better sense of humor than what I just picked up on through his videos, just like sharing camp with him and spending more time with him. So we were just talking about how fun that was. And Scheffler had killed that turkey. And then he was filming me. Ted was dropped back calling this spot the night before. We call in a bunch of Jakes. Bobcat comes in, is looking at us, and all these Jakes end up working off and roosting right above this creek and they're gobbling their brains out. And one of them just sounded like it might have been a tom, and we couldn't see them all when they came in. And Jared hadn't turkey hunted in, 10 years or something like that. And we're in a pine thicket that's, super dark. And they're roosted right above this river, and they're gobbling every time Ted owl hoots. And it was just, super quiet to move through there in those pine needles, deer trails everywhere. I was like, Ted, you keep hooting at him. I'm going to go down there and just make sure that one's not a longbeard. And Jared looked at me like, you're going to what? He's like, you're not going to be able to see him up there. And I go down there, and I can see them all except for, one or two, I think, were roosted across the river. But everyone I saw just had, beard like that.
A cigar butt.
Yeah. And we go back to camp and tell Gooch and Shane. And Shane's just like, that one's a long beard. Sounds like a long beard. We did, a poll on Instagram, I think, and of the audio. And, there was, 80 or 90% of people said long beard gobble. So Gooch and Shane, and Gooch is like, I'll shoot a Jake. I'll shoot one of the Jakes if they come in. So me, Ted, all four or five of us, whatever, go in there in the morning, and we're going to bed the night before. Shane's like, we got to get up, because this is last week of season. We got to get up at 2:30 or, some ridiculous time. And Jared's just like, what? And we're giving Shane shit all night. It's about how early we're going to wake up, and we get in there. It's perfect situation. Drops off real steep to the creek bottom, then a ridge right up above them. They got a pitch right up there if they come to our side. And we get in there super, super early. And those same deal, it kind of rained. Those turkeys stayed on the limb for 2 hours past when, they would normally fly down. So we're just sitting there for hours waiting for them to fly down. They fly down, and Shane and Gooch end up doubling up on Jake's. But we just got in there so early, and they didn't fly down until super, super late.
We were talking about, Ted and I talked about that yesterday, just turkey sitting in the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But one other thing that comes to my mind is in a setup, trying to anticipate where they might go. We've obviously talked about that some, but the example that I just told you this morning, I turned to Nick, I said, before we leave, can I tell you a quick story? He said, come on with it, or something like that. And I told him the story about the turkey that Keith and I got in Montana, which was, I think, the same morning maybe that you ended up shooting one too, and then we left. But we had been struggling, not finding anything, and kind of stumbled upon the turkey. We were up on a humpback ridge, and we had got up there just because we were going to go look at the view. No joke, we just thought it would be a cool view because we were like, well, there's no turkeys in here. Because we'd called and nothing responded, and how good that sounds. And we get in this on this ridge, and this turkey gobbles, and he's below us, and he's right where a small little finger of a creek in a finger of a creek and the actual creek meet, and he's in a big pine, and it's from there, he can pitch to this side or this side, but he's not going to fly down to the bottom and come up. It's he's either going to land on one flat or the other. And what we kind of decided was we were going to go to the far hillside, away from the access, where he wasn't going to be able to see as much. There was more terrain there. So we were actually, in that situation, super close to the turkey, but we couldn't see him, which I think the reason I bring all that up, example up specifically, is some situations you really don't want to see the turkey. You want him, like you said too, if you're the type of guy that can't be patient enough to not call to him on the roost, then you want to be in a situation where you have to, they have to make a move to get to you, and then you can call, then you can be as loud as you want. And I remember that morning we were sitting there and we did call. He didn't gobble. Super. That was a nerve-wracking one. But I'll fast forward to the best parts. Here, eventually, I was like, man, Keith, I swear I just heard a turkey fly down. So I get up and I kind of look back to this direction. I'm like, oh, there's a hen out there. And she's still probably 300 yards away, but just kind of pecking around. And it's like, man, we saw that, Tom. And now, of course, we can't see. So it's like, who knows where he went? Because there's been no gobbles. And I get up and I kind of get on my knees and I turn way to the hard left, and Keith's up to the hard right. And we've got this giant bush around us in the base of the tree, and the one side of it's just open. And that's our shooting lane is this. So I'm up on my knees peeing, and I'm looking at that hen. Out of the corner of my eye, I see this tom from the night before, just totally gray-headed and just running like hell, getting out of there. And I'm just like midstream and I can't do anything because my gun's like back here facing out and Keith's like over my right shoulder. And because of where I'm angled, he can't even hear me being like, oh, I think I probably said, oh my God, he's right here. Still midstream because like it's max. Like I'm bladder full, so I'm not even attempting. I'm just letting her rip. And he runs right through gun range. And as I'm not moving, watching him go out of sight, here comes three Jakes. And it's like right in that exact moment, it's like, ah, that's why I didn't gobble. He ran all the way around that tree getting chased by those Jakes. Once he got on the backside, the bush was covering us. I finally then communicate. I said, Keith, the Tom is getting chased by Jakes. He's right behind us in gun range coming towards us. And I turn, get laid on the ground, and I'm basically, Keith's sitting like this, filming like this, and I'm like, you know, got my gun pointed here. I'm laying at his feet, and he ends up coming around and just getting ran right by those from those Jakes right to us and got a point blank shot. And it's just like, you know, you hear of a Merriam's hunt, uh-huh, being like, oh man, those Merriam's, they just gobble so much. It's like, I shot at Merriam's that never gobbled, mm-hmm. You know, but in that situation, I guess it could have played into him coming up there feeling comfortable. Is we wanted to be able to call, and we thought from that spot, we could tell the night before, we could see the tree and the bush on that kind of flat open hillside. It's like, that's enough cover. We can get to the base of that tree without much noise or effort, and we can call to him from there, and he probably won't see us. And that was a big part of why we went there that next morning. And I just think that that's something that you can definitely take advantage of, is like putting yourself in a situation where there's something between you and them, and then you can kind of get as wild as you want.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the fly down. You can do, you know, a lot of scratching on the ground.
What year was that?
2021, I think.
21. I'm going to pull up. I'm going to watch that. I want to watch just the kill clip of that right quick.
Oh, dude, the shot's like crazy. It's just like, I don't know how Keith holds the camera so steady. Honestly, it's like kind of weird how...
He's got ice in his veins.
Yeah. Shoot, he's sitting over the shoulder of a 450 Bushmaster and doesn't flinch so much that you can see the ripple of the bullet downrange. But, yeah. I don't know. I guess if anybody's listening to this or watching this and you guys have, you know, additional questions about it, off the roost, we can definitely cover it another time. I feel like as we continue to get more and more experience,
we'll hopefully get in the exact situation you're asking about, mm-hmm, at some point this spring.
Mm-hmm. But I think that we've covered a lot of good stuff. I can't really think of anything else that I would want to talk about off the roost.
One other thing you just mentioned, that instead of calling, if you are tight, having either a wing or just something, you know, your hat to make wing noises. That could be something more subtle that you could do if you're close. Obviously not if they can see you, you can't do it. But if you're just, you know, they say they're just over some terrain or something like that, and you just, that's a super realistic thing, and they know they should be able to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to get a wing. I mean, it's one of those things that it's not really that hard to pack around. You just slip it in the...
Yeah.
You don't need a lot of it. You take that little piece, yeah, and, you, I mean...
Or, I mean, at some point this spring, you're going to see a hen dead on the side of the road. Just lop one of those suckers off. Mm-hmm. It's a little smaller. Tuck it in the vest a little easier. Like, you seem to get hit on the road, nested in the ditch.
You watch the shot.
Let me see.
That thing got mashed.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's kind of a crazy one.
That's graphic.
Yeah. He does this.
Yeah, he caught every bit of it.
Mm-hmm. Old gray head.
He's a pretty bird, though. Really, oh,
yeah,
wide fan.
Oh, yeah.
And when you told me about this story and you were referencing where we were, I see it perfectly in my head now. Of, like, I remember being there riding around and you telling me you killed a turkey there,
oh,
but
yeah,
I can I can see it now in my mind, mm-hmm, what that area was like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool to have a different type of turkey hunt too, like that. Like, that's super memorable to me. Like, not a ton of people have watched that video just because there's not a lot of views on it and compared to, mm-hmm, other ones that we've made, which, whatever. But to me, that's a really crazy Marriott's hunt.
You pick away things that stand out, like a move, a move you had to make to kill that turkey or whatever. I mean, everybody loves watching one come strutting and gobbling in your face and never knows you're there, and you shoot him at 15 yards, and he never knew. But when you have to do something like that, you'll remember stuff like that.
For sure. I mean, that's the same trip that I'm pretty sure it's that video right there that Hayden shoots, the one that's just like, like right in their face, and it's just like,
yeah,
you
I'm
got
looking
that.
At this one, episode 39. That's another, that's like the textbook roost hunt right there. Greg roosted the turkey. We had to make this big loop around him, get between him and the private. We had a drop back guy on that one. Ted's back behind me and Greg.
Oh, yeah, that's and another thing in a roost hunt.
Yeah, where he just pulled him straight up there and literally shot him as he was gobbling. But the whole way up there, he's just, Ted's calling at him. Yeah.
Watching Tim Jake shot it?
I did.
Oh, you shot it.
That's the only one I've ever shot mid-gobble, I think.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't even really do it on purpose. It's like I called at him, and that's just what happened. And he was at a distance where I felt comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And like I was saying the other day, it's like they do it, they gobble longer. You know, their head sticks out longer than a Eastern, it seems like.
Eastern, it's like a snake bite. Yeah. It's just like, tow.
Yeah.
Dude, that turkey that Keith shot on the day that we had the Wyoming double.
Yeah.
That turkey comes up and he gobbles one way, then he gobbles another way, and then he gobbles, and it's just like, he just keeps going, and the whole time Keith's just like, should I shoot him right there? And I'm just like, let him keep doing that.
Just getting drunk on it.
Yeah.
Dude, he looks so cool, but yeah, you probably should. Let him keep it. Oh, I need one more.
Oh, that was awesome. But, yeah, anyway. I think with that we can wrap things up. But yeah, appreciate everybody listening. Thanks guys for doing this. I think that was a good one. I think it was. Mm-hmm. I think we covered some good stuff. Catch y'all on the next one.